Are you in your 20s or 30s and doing well in today's economy? What's your secret? Or are you or your kids or grandkids struggling to make ends meet? Did you take a job below your educational level? Do you have a college degree? We are going to talk about how the economic recovery is leaving some young people behind and what should be done about it. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, February 4th. Our guest economist is the director of the Young American Prosperity Project at the Progressive Policy Institute, author of a report on how young people are faring in the economic recovery. And it turns out not so well, especially for those between the ages of 18 and 34 who do not have college degrees. And even some who do have college degrees are not finding gainful employment and are saddled with debt. What should happen to help young people rebound? What is your situation, your question, or your proposed solution? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on our Facebook page at The Joy Cardine Show or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Diana Carew, and she's an economist and director of the Young American Prosperity Project at the Progressive Policy Institute. At PPI, she also works on issues related to innovation and growth in the U.S. economy, including investment, technology, policy, and regulatory reform. She also leads PPI's work on the economic obstacles affecting young Americans, covering topics such as student debt, workforce preparedness, and financial security. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, what exactly is the Young American Prosperity Project?
Well, it's basically taking after the name. I'm really concerned about our generation, the millennial generation, and our economic and financial well-being. And, you know, young Americans have had a really rough decade, and they're having a really rough recovery so far. And I'd like to see them prosper in tomorrow's economy.
Yeah. So how rough of a time are they having?
They're having a pretty rough time. It's getting a little bit better, but gradually. And there's a really stark divergence by educational attainment. So there's some good factors. It's not all doom and gloom. But, you know, they've seen their real earnings fall dramatically over the last decade. Their unemployment is still significantly higher, especially for young people with only a high school diploma. It's still 6% higher than it was before the recession began. There's still a lot of long way they need to go. They're making some progress, but it's still a much slower recovery than for any other age group.
Yeah, why do you think that is?
You know, I think there's a lot of factors at play here, and it's a really interesting question, and it's a really important question, especially when we think about how we can help young Americans, and that's why I'm studying this subject. I think a lot of it has to do with the shape of the labor market in terms of who's hiring, really important to understand is it's not just a recession issue. Young Americans have had a rough decade. You can see their numbers start to fall really in the early 2000s, which tells you that this is more of a structural long-term problem that requires a different set of policy fixes. And I think you see the rise of globalization, which has fundamentally changed our labor market. You've seen that hollowing out of middle-skilled jobs. And these are a lot of those jobs that young college graduates in particular would have taken. So those jobs just aren't there in the way that they were before. So young college graduates are stuck. And what's going on here is that if they're not qualified for those high-skilled tech, data, engineering, STEM jobs that we hear a lot about, which are growing, they're taking jobs that, you know, might not require a college degree. And what's actually happening is that they're squeezing themselves down and out of the labor force altogether. So when a young college graduate takes a job that maybe somebody with some college or a high school degree could have taken, they're leaving less opportunities for them. And that, in turn, is actually affecting the worst, more young people. So you see an issue in terms of keeping up with globalization, in terms of workforce preparedness for the jobs that are hiring. And you see, you know, realistically, in truth, there's some issue with the fact that baby boomers just aren't retiring right now. And so there's fewer jobs, there's fewer turnover in general.
Yeah, and why is globalization involved in this? Because these middle-skilled jobs are elsewhere
so
now?
So basically, you're seeing a big I'm calling it a fundamental shift in the labor force. Over the last decade, there's just been a divergence in terms of the shape of our labor force. You've got these really high-skill, high-wage jobs in the tech sector, in engineering, and you've in data-driven jobs. And you've got these, and then you've got your lower skill jobs, but those middle tier jobs just are disappearing. And in fact, you see a study after study that shows that in the recovery, 60% of the jobs that have come back are in that lower tier job. And there's really not, the middle skill jobs just aren't coming back. And I do think that there's international competition now. There's technology now. There's all of these things that don't need to be a problem. But if our policies don't keep up, it is a problem.
Yeah. So if there aren't those middle skilled jobs anymore, does that mean everybody going to college has to take some sort of, get some sort of science or tech degree?
No, but what it does mean is that we need to be careful about our investment. We need to think of college as a workforce preparedness tool, as a credential. So we need to be mindful about the investment we're making, and this is where student debt comes into play. So we need to be mindful of the cost compared to the expected return. So we know that not all college degrees are created equal. You know, where you go matters. What you study matters. That's just a reality. So we have to say to ourselves, you know, what is the expected return on this credential, and, you know, how much is it going to cost me to get that credential, or what kinds of other skills are employers looking for? We need to be thinking about what's going to make us a desirable candidate to the employers that are hiring so that we can get ourselves a good job.
You note in a piece that that you wrote that we found on the where do we find it? On the Daily Beast. That the Higher Education Act is coming up for reauthorization over the next year, and that policymakers can help out young Americans through this. What? How so?
So the Higher Education Act is the government's legislation that governs student aid programs. So federal student aid is what funds about 90% of students who need money to go to college when they take out a loan. It's mostly a federal loan. And so these programs were originally established in 1965 and have seen very little reform since then. And as we know, the student debt problem has really gained some serious traction over the last couple of years, and it suggests that perhaps that we could use some reform here in terms of repayment options, in terms of how these loans are structured, because at the end of the day, you've got rising college costs, and perhaps that's a big problem, and perhaps we can use the Higher Education Act as a tool to help rein in college costs, as a tool to help encourage students to make better decisions. So I see this as a big opportunity.
Yeah, what else can policymakers do to help young Americans?
You know, I think that there are more things than we realize that they can do. I think that one thing that we can do, and actually I think President Obama is about to make a big announcement today about integrating technology in the classroom, and I think this is so crucial for workforce preparedness. We really need to make sure that young people, even before they go to college, this has to start early. Not only does tech need to be integrated into the classroom, but they need to be trained in financial literacy, and this is really key, and this could also be part of the Higher Education Act, is that financial literacy component. We need to be seeing career development, people thinking about what jobs they want and how to get there earlier in their lives. And we need to be thinking about encouraging savings and investment and wealth building, because you're seeing now that young people really aren't building wealth, and this is going to affect them long term. So you want to think about ways to encourage savings and investment early on. You want to think about educational reforms at the secondary level. You want to be thinking about financial literacy. You want to be thinking about, and in particular, a piece of legislation that comes to my mind is the Workforce Investment Act. That's another piece of legislation that Congress is mulling around in the many pieces of legislation they have. Could we use that in a way that would target young Americans?
We are talking with Diana Carew, and she's an economist and director of the Young American Prosperity Project at the Progressive Policy Institute. We're talking with her about how young people are faring in today's economy, and talking with her about her piece, How Young People Are Being Left Out of the Economic Recovery. We're talking about why this is and what can be done about it, and welcoming your questions and your suggestions. What's your situation? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 20 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, February 4th. Our guest this hour says young people are being left out of the economic recovery, especially those who don't have a college degree. And even those with a college degree, some are taking lower-skilled jobs that do not require one, and they're saddled with student loan debt. Talking about what can be done about this to improve the economic lot of young Americans, and welcoming your thoughts, your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Diana Carew is an economist, director of the Young American Prosperity Project at the Progressive Policy Institute. Let's go to the phones. John in Appleton is with us first. Hello, John.
Hey, good morning, Joy, and morning. Your guest, and thank you for everybody who's listening and involved today. I work in high school guidance services here in Northeast Wisconsin, and I wanted to stress three things and get your guest's response. First is the skilled trades are screaming for workers and screaming for young apprentices, and they're having a difficult time reaching them. And these jobs pay very well, you know, starting out in the $30,000-plus range for a high school graduate. No college degrees required. They'll train you on the job. Second thing is the fact that, and I agree with what your guest said before, those are all great steps to do. Second thing is kids need to start documenting their volunteerism and their hobbies, and they're getting their passion down on paper and actually spending time doing it. And third is, and this goes in this number two, kids need to become more assertive. You know, so many adults complain about the texting generation and, you know, they're all absorbed in their iPads and stuff. That's true, and really kids need to get out there and meet people and really develop a strong sense of themselves so that they can make those pursuits of employers who aren't even posting jobs, which are far in the majority of situations out there for any people, for anyone looking for work.
Well, thanks for all those ideas. Diana, what do you make of the skilled trades are screaming for workers?
Yeah, I can't emphasize that enough. These are great points. Thanks for raising these comments with me. This is what I mean about alternative pathways into the workforce. That's why we need to think about a college degree as a credential. It's just one way of getting into the workforce. And I think that over the last couple of decades, our society has put such a preeminence on the idea of getting a four-year degree that it's almost the only acceptable way of continuing your education after college. And you're not seeing a vocational training as sexy, but it is, and it's in high demand, as our caller said. And this needs to be at the forefront of our minds as a realistic option for us when we graduate high school, because there are these jobs and they do require some training. But if you go that route, they're there, they're hiring, they're paying really well, and there's a full career ahead of you. So I think that is so important to emphasize here.
Can I ask what kind of skilled trades these are?
I think these are a lot of those manufacturing jobs, a lot of these vocational jobs, even like HVAC jobs. There's just a lot of these technical vocational jobs that maybe, you know, even engineering to some extent, building engineering, for example. But I'm hearing a lot in the manufacturing space about, you know, metal workers that, you know, that they just can't find these workers anymore that want these jobs, but they're hiring.
Yeah, so you don't need the 4-year bachelor's degree. You could
get a certificate. Mm-hmm. You could get a post-secondary vocational award. You could work. Mm-hmm. A lot of these employers are so desperate. They're doing what they should do, and they're creating programs with local community colleges to train these people and to get them certificates. And then they've got a funnel right into being hired upon graduation.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think of his ideas regarding kids documenting their hobbies and their volunteerism to find their purpose?
Yes, I do think that young people especially need to think about what they like, what they want to do, what they're good at. You need to be asking yourself these questions earlier than we are. And that's part of the problem, is that young people aren't focused early enough, in my opinion. This is just my opinion. And so they're taking a long time to figure it out, and it's almost, in a lot of cases, too late by the time that they're there. And when I think about extracurricular activities, I think of it as a way to show the employer that you really are dedicated, especially if you're not studying a subject that immediately calls out to that occupation or that company. An extracurricular activity is a great way to show that you do care, that you are engaged, and that you do have a knowledge base in that area.
Yeah, and are kids or young people today too absorbed in their iPads and not enough with interpersonal communication?
Well, this is up for debate. This is the ongoing question. I think, in some ways that's true, but in other ways, the fact that young people are digital natives are only going to help them in the workforce, given the jobs that are hiring today. I do think you need to have a very high level of digital literacy. So that's important. And the fact is, a lot of people do communicate on social media. A lot of people do communicate online. So you do need to be able to do that. That said, being part of the older part of the millennial generation, I agree. There's not that much social contact, and young people do seem to, at least in my experience and in speaking with others my age, they're losing a little bit of their ability to connect directly with employers, which is also a very important skill.
John, thanks very much for calling in. Let's move now to Randy in Madison. Hello, Randy.
Hi, Joanne. It's a great topic. I sort of want to piggyback on to what the last caller said, in that tech schools are a great tool. I'm sort of an anomaly. I went to a tech school, then to a 4-year, and now I'm at one of Wisconsin's law schools. And the reason, so the thing that I see with the tech schools is that while it does train you for a job, it only trains you for one job, whereas the 4-year degree gives you more latitude to be more appealing to employers. However, it comes down to what you major in.
Yeah. So the 2-year tech college degree is good, but it's not maybe as flexible because it's just one job, Diana?
Well, and this comes down to having a focus and to that, risk-benefit analysis. If you know you want a good job and you like the idea of high-tech manufacturing, or you're willing to, and once you're in a company, that's not to say you can't move around or be promoted, but again, with that 4-year degree, it is a risk. You either have a focus and you know what you're going to do, and if you pick a field of study that might not, because in a lot of cases it does matter what you study, if you pick a field of study that is what they say is versatile, then you're going to have, in some ways, if you don't have a focus, you are going to have a harder time finding a job, and you might not find a job that pays as much as what you put into it.
Yeah. So the 4-year liberal arts education in English, journalism, maybe not so much.
That's not what I'm saying at all. I think liberal arts colleges have a very important purpose. I'm saying that not everybody needs a liberal arts degree. And when you think about what you're paying for that degree, you need to have a sense of expectation on the other side of that. And you just have to go in with your eyes open. And when you do have a liberal arts degree, you need to have a focus. So I have so many people calling me as people, recent graduates, saying, well, I don't know what I want to do. And it's, well, okay, then you're not getting your money's worth out of your credential.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Randy, for the call. Charles emails, as the population increases and the workplace becomes more automated, created, there will be fewer jobs to be had. How will there ever be enough jobs for a growing population? What will those jobs be, and what will those jobs pay? The need for most of these positions is limited. He goes on, but what do you have to say about that?
I think that we can have jobs for everyone. I mean, maybe that's a utopian perspective, but I don't think that we are in a dire crisis. I think that natural population growth has always occurred, and the labor market has generally, in over the last couple of decades, done a good job absorbing everybody. It's just that now we've hit quite a bit of a rough patch, especially for young people, and we just need to be mindful of that, and we need to not ignore it and sweep it under the rug. If we do the right policies now, if we conscientiously make young people a priority now, I think we'll be okay going forward.
We are talking with Diana Carew. She's an economist and director of the Young American Prosperity Project at the Progressive Policy Institute. And we are talking about how young people are being left out of the economic recovery. And we're welcoming your experience. We're welcoming your question or your solution. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about how and why young people are being left out of the economic recovery. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Tuesday, February 4th. We are talking with Diana Carew. She's an economist and director of the Young American Prosperity Project at the Progressive Policy Institute. And we're welcoming your questions for her and your own experiences. Are you or are your children or grandchildren struggling to make ends meet? Are you in your 20s or 30s and doing well or not so well in today's economy? Let us know. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Diana Carew is also the author of a piece, How Young People Are Being Left Out of the Economic Recovery, and it shows that for those between the ages of 18 and 34 who do not have college degrees, the situation is not so good. And even those who have college degrees are not finding employment that is suitable in terms of their skill level or their educational level, and they're also saddled with student debt. So we're talking about what needs to happen to help young people in today's economy. And before we go back to the phones, Diana Carew, give us an overall picture on how young people are doing today in the economic recovery.
Well, the young people are doing okay, but they need to be doing better. They should be doing better. You know, these are the foundational years of their career development. So the fact that they're not doing well, and not only are they not doing well, but well relative to other age groups, is why we should be concerned. So in my research, what I found is that in general, if you have a college degree or an associate's degree, your labor force participation rates are stable, your earnings are, you know, improving, albeit slightly. If you have a high school diploma, you're not nearly as well off. You're actually seeing falling unemployment, but you're also seeing falling labor force participation. So you must wonder whether or not falling unemployment is coming at the expense of labor force participation. And in fact, we have been hearing about that a lot in the news recently. And I will make the point about earnings. So last year, in a green shoot, earnings did rise slightly for young people. However, overall, over the last couple of years, earnings have fallen 5% for young people, whereas for the general population, we hear about stagnant wages, it's increased 2%. So not much, but still much better off than young Americans are today.
Yeah. Can you help us, too, in putting this into perspective? I'm thinking about when I got out of college, you know, many, 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 many years ago. and took my first job at near poverty wages. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, baby boomers expect that we're going to, you know, you work up to a higher wage through the, you know, your career ladder. Why can't young people today count on doing that?
I mean, and that's a great question. It's really important because, actually, young people have always experienced a higher level of what the so-called underemployment, being, you know, employed in an occupation that might not match your skill level, for example. That's always been high for young college graduates as they make their way into the workforce. What's not usual is how high it is, and new Fed data just came out actually that confirmed that historically underemployment for young people is at very high, and that it's not really going down as fast as it should. Young people are taking much longer to integrate themselves into the workforce, even those with a college degree. And this is a big problem when you think about the student debt burden that's saddled on top of that. So there's just a confluence of factors here that are hitting young people where it hurts at a time where they really shouldn't be hit that hard.
Yeah, I had student debt in the hundreds of dollars, not in the tens of thousands of dollars.
And the average student debt now is almost $30,000. Mm-hmm. And that's just the average. So we mm-hmm. have to be mindful of that. These are high monthly payments. The Obama administration is doing what they can to control monthly payments, but at the end of the day, that's not really addressing the problem of student cost, of college cost, of tuition increases, and making sure that students are getting the return for their investment.
Back to the phones. Jim in Waukesha is with us. Hello, Jim.
Hello. Hey, I just wanted to say, with all the hits that the small businessman's taking right now, I think that the federal government should step in and give us a tax break for those small business that hire people with the idea of training them for their position. I mean, and that would be more beneficial for those who go through extended schooling, but also for those who finish school, because it's clearly an incentive for the employer when they see that somebody's taking the initiative to, you know, stick through with the schooling. So,
yeah, tax credit for a business that hires and trains people, Diana.
I think that's an interesting idea. If my memory serves me correctly, I think we've seen something like this before, a hiring tax credit. It may have expired, but I'm not necessarily opposed to the idea. I think it would all depend on how it's structured and making sure that employers don't use it as sort of a loophole, but that they are getting training. And this comes back to actually that internship question of paid versus unpaid internships. And so it's a very interesting idea, but the devil is in the details.
Yeah. Is there a skills gap? A lot of people say that if businesses would just train their new hires, there wouldn't be a skills gap.
Well, to some extent, that's harder to do in some positions than others. Some of these, you know, we live in a data-driven economy, and in a lot of cases, these data-driven jobs, these very technical jobs, it's not so easy to just immediately train you. In some cases, it is, but And this, again, gets back to that alternative pathways. A lot of these tech companies are thinking about their own certification programs to do that kind of training, so to bypass the four-year degree altogether. I think that there's just it's just a new economy. I don't think that the skills gap is new, but I think it's widening.
Ann in Brownsville is with us now. Hello, Ann.
Hi. Hi, Joy. A little while ago, somebody was sort of saying that technical college is so narrow-focused. What they are is they have courses that are required for a degree program or an associate degree, which improve communication skills. There's one course. I took an associate degree when the kids grew up. There's one course where you have to stand up in front of a video camera and then get critiqued on how your talk went.
So you're suggesting that the technical college degree is not just focused for, you know, a skill for one job, that it has broader instruction.
Well, not so much that, but a college degree, you won't have that kind of focus. You won't be learning practical skills that you need no matter what your job is.
Oh, I see, because you're saying that at a liberal arts college, we're not going to learn, we're not going to get critiqued on our in front of a video camera kind of a thing.
Well, and you won't have the, probably you won't have a how to write a letter. You won't have how to write a report, this kind of thing. And, I mean, colleges aren't designed for that, of course, but the technical colleges are. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be a really good idea. I can't see it happening, but if colleges would not accept somebody who hasn't had a year in the workplace.
Well, what about that, Diana?
I think that that's an interesting suggestion. I'm not quite sure about the idea that a liberal arts college doesn't give those kinds of skill training. I think liberal arts colleges see themselves as preparing critical thinkers, but you do a lot of reports. You do a lot of presentations. I think those are more of the softer skills, though. That's part of the package. I do agree that a technical institution will give you those more technical skills in addition to those soft skills, and that is a value. And of course, not all colleges are liberal arts colleges. I don't mean to talk as if they all are. There are a lot of technical four-year institutions out there.
Well, here's a couple of interesting Facebook comments. Nick on Facebook writes, I think people should be going for trade jobs with apprenticeships. Make money while you learn. I am an apprentice lineman, and I made at least $70,000 a year instead of acquiring debt. And then it's Cindy in Pepin says her 24-year-old son enrolled in a technical school for $16,000, and he got a $75,000 job offer. Wow.
Yeah, this is what I mean about alternative pathways into the workforce. People don't know. People just see four-year as the only option. I mean, do you know that there are as many four-year institutions as there are counties in the United States, almost 3,000 of them? Is that too many? You've seen, and the explosion in the number of four-year schools has really been over the last two decades. There's tremendous opportunity for some of these technical jobs, and they are hiring. We do have a really robust high-tech manufacturing sector, and it's renaissance here. I do think people need to be thinking about that.
Yeah, we have Robert on Twitter who says, at 33 years old, one full-time job, one part-time job. I'm going to tech college for welding. There's demand, and it pays. So welding is one of those fields?
Welding is one of those fields.
Mm-hmm. And what are the other fields? I mean, where is the job market today or in the near future?
I think that in high-tech manufacturing, for example, there's a lot of clustering up in the Midwest, North Carolina, and in Florida even. I think that the labor market of the future is definitely going to continue to be data-driven. I think you're going to see a lot of, information, tech, internet-related jobs. But you're also going to see a lot of these more vocational jobs. I think the labor market of the future is going to be one where the four-year college model is just one model. It's not the only model. It's not the only model today, but I think you'll see a lot of these online training, these MOOCs, these massive open online courses will gain some traction as we figure out the right formula for hybrid education. And I think you'll see community colleges, people getting fed up with having to take out 4 years of student loans, companies working more with colleges, with their local community to get the skills they need. I think you're going to see some shifts going on.
We are talking about how young people are being left out of the economic recovery and how they can get involved with the economic recovery, and welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, February 4th. We are talking with Diana Carew, an economist and director of the Young American Prosperity Project at the Progressive Policy Institute. We are talking about how and why young people, young Americans between the ages of 18 and 34, are being left out of the economic recovery, especially those without a college degree. And our next caller is Bill in River Falls. Hello, Bill.
Hi. Good morning, Joy. Good morning to your guests. Pardon if you covered this earlier in the program, but a comment, and I'd like your guest's perspective on this. All of these things about job training, about associate's degree, all of these things are part of the equation and part of the solution. But there's another 800-pound gorilla, in my opinion, that this study and other stuff never seems to address, and that is the lack of demand for jobs, in part created by the reward system of corporations to overcompensate their executives at the expense of investing in jobs. In my own case, my own profession, I've seen our CEO get an $8 million a year bonus on top of his $14 million a year salary because he cut 5,000 jobs. And if that's the sort of reward system that's inherent in our job creation structure, then you don't create jobs.
All right, Diana Carew.
Well, you know, I actually think you raise a really important point. And to me, that point is about returns to labor, right, in the form of income, in terms of earnings. So when we see companies doing really well and we think about stocks, we think about how less and less of corporate profits are being returned to the workers. And I think that's what this caller was getting at here. And I agree. And moreover, I agree that reliance on labor earnings alone is not enough for a secure retirement at this point. And this is why it's so important that we need policies that help young people save and invest, because they need to participate in the capital market. They need to participate in where corporate money is going, and that's back to the shareholders. So if you're not participating, you're being left out of an entire part of your earnings potential. And so when we think about how young people are building less wealth than their parents were at our age, which they are, this is even more disconcerting, because we can't think about just reliance on our labor income alone. And the fact of the matter is, you know, with a globalized world, companies are profit-seeking. They are trying to stay competitive. This is not something that's unusual or that we should be, you know, very, very angry about, because it's just natural corporate behavior in some respects. And the idea is that we need to be a part of where the money is going if we want to see a secure retirement.
So would young people be a lot better off if aging baby boomers like yours truly would get the heck out of the job market?
Yeah, I actually would like to see a labor market that is healthy enough for everybody to be working. I think that there is some bottlenecking in the baby boomer generation that's taking place. And I think that as they start to retire, as they start to feel more confident in the recovery, you will see some of that turnover. And I think that will help young people. That's only part of the solution.
Victoria in Poinette is with us. Hello, Victoria.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. I'm very excited when I hear a program like this. I'm a school counselor. And at our school, I'm happy to say that, you know, we allow time for students and parents to learn about the different options that are at technical colleges and at four-year colleges. And we really try to promote the different types of programs that are out there for students, but that one isn't better than the other. But the problem is, it does take time to at school to make sure you're educating the parents and the students and let them know what their opportunities are out there. As a parent myself, I'm proud to say I have one student, one child, who is a graduate of a technical college program. She's a PTA at UW Hospital. It's a very, very fine job, and I couldn't be prouder of her choice. She made a choice between a four-year school and a technical college program, a rigorous technical college program, and took the technical college program and is very successful in it. And then I have a son who's going to be graduating from a four-year program.
Wonderful. And we have a little bit of a fuzzy connection, Victoria, so I'm going to go to Diana Carew for a response. It sounds like school counselors are informing parents of these options and the children of these options for technical colleges, but maybe they're not taking them up on that option.
And it's not clear how widespread that trend is. You know, it's not clear that career development is encouraged in all of the school districts across the country at the secondary level. And I think that is really important to integrate that into the curriculum at a younger age. And it is really important to show students that they have different options out there for them. And so students can think about what's right for me. What am I interested in? What do I want with my career? What work-life balance do I want? Think about this early on.
Yeah. And is there still a negative stigma when it comes to a technical college degree as opposed to, some sort of other hoity 4 or more-year degree?
It's so important. I think that there still is, and it's just an awareness issue at this point, because I think that the technical vocational pathway is just as good and maybe even better for some people, and that, you know, that hopefully more awareness will fix any stigmatism that still remains. And we must think about, when a four-year college, not all colleges are created equally. So some colleges are excellent and some colleges not so much, and we just need to think about that. If we do go to a four-year college, where will we go? You know, so it's a multivariable equation here.
Well, in our final minute, what is it that you would like policymakers to do this year to help young people benefit in this economic recovery?
First and foremost, I'd like policymakers to make young people a bigger priority. They are largely left out of the conversation here in D.C., and I think that's problem number one. I'd really like to just see them agree that young people need to be a bigger priority. So when they take up legislation like the Higher Education Act, the Workforce Investment Act, when we even think about MyRAs, the new retirement plan that Obama proposed at the State of the Union speech, how can this help young people? There's a lot of potential here that's right at our fingertips. It's low-hanging fruit. Let's make young people a bigger priority.
We'll be talking more about the MyRAs or MyRAs coming up during On Your Money, our show that we have coming up after 8 o'clock. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Diana Carew is an economist and director of the Young American Prosperity Project at the Progressive Policy Institute. Her piece, How Young People Are Being Left Out of the Economic Recovery, is posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing and directing this program. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. We're going to be talking about the Keystone Pipeline coming up after 7 o'clock, and it's information and advice on your money coming up after 8 o'clock. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.